The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you and enjoy.
Story from many years ago, back when there used to be travel agents. This guy had his travel agency, and he was reading about kindness, and he got really inspired. He said, I want to live my life being a more kind and generous person. And he noticed that there was a couple out there looking at some of the posters for a cruise. And just in a moment of inspiration, he went out and he said, I want to gift you to this cruise. It's just for me. It'll make me really feel really good. And, you know, they started to object. He said, don't say a word. I don't want to hear a word from you. Here's when it leaves. It's all taken care of. You're going as my guest. And so a week later, the woman came into his office. He said, how did you like the cruise? She said, it was great, but who was that old guy I had to room with for the week? So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about kindness as a practice. We tend to think of meditation as awareness training around either learning how to develop concentration and stay on point, or learning how to be the observer and less reactive to what changes, or learning how to direct our attention toward just being in presence. But as it said, that's just one wing of the two wings of the practice. One is absolutely about training your attention, but the other wing is around cultivating your capacity to open to loving presence, to compassion, to kindness, to empathy. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about these states that are really quite exquisite. And you can absolutely train yourself to become sensitized to these states, to become more aware of them, and to increase your capacity to experience them. So one of them is kindness, or loving kindness. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what happens when you're cut off from your heart, and what happens when you begin to undertake this training of looking for the good, of looking for the good in yourself, and looking for the good in others, looking for the good in the people who present challenges to you. And then I'd like to offer a little loving kindness challenge, the loving kindness project at the end of the talk, which I think you might enjoy. One of the things I have seen just in my interactions with many people is how isolated people feel, how alone people feel in our culture, and how much people are wanting connection, and they don't have it. I was reading an interview with someone who survived throwing himself off the Golden Gate Bridge. There are a few people who have survived, and they interviewed them. And he talked about how he was in such a dark place inside, where he felt so so self-absorbed that he told himself, I'm going to walk down to the bridge, and if someone smiles at me, I won't throw myself off. And of course, no one did. It's amazing how the smallest acts of kindness can have huge impact. When I was 20 and getting my master's degree, I was at a conference And it was at the National Council of Teachers of English conference, which was a really wild time, I got to tell you. My father was an English professor, has some colleagues there, and I ended up talking to some of his colleagues in the street during one of the breaks. And later I was told that someone I was talking to told one of my father's colleagues, he said, "That young man is going places." And it really shifted something. Just those kind words really created a shift for me. Of course, he didn't say what places I was going. He might have been talking about rehab or prison or curled up in some back alley somewhere, but I didn't take it that way. It just created it became kind of a touch point for me. Like somewhere, I just thought, I'm going places. That unsolicited little bit of kindness had such an impact. And Mark Twain famously said, "I can live for a good 2 months on a compliment." You know, we are all wanting to be seen and recognized, and it makes such a difference. So one of the elements of training yourself in kindness is to really reflect on what it feels like to receive it. So I'd like to lead a short reflection. If you like, you can close your eyes. And I'd like to invite you to first just to feel your breath. And just notice how when you just feel one breath on the inside, how it automatically begins to draw your attention inward. And if you would, just think of an act of unsolicited kindness that you may have received. Take some time to kind of go through the files. A moment of unsolicited kindness. If you can't think of one, you can make one up just for the practice. And sense now if you can sort of isolate just one experience. And take a moment to kind of breathe into that. When you think about that, where do you feel that inside? And you might even, if you like, just sort of bring your hand to that place wherever you feel that. Just acknowledging in these moments what it feels like to receive, to be on the receiving end of kindness. And if you like, you can deepen your breath and you can open your eyes. So when I ask you to place your hands, I peeked, but, you know, hands on the heart, on the throat, on the belly, there is such a sweetness around the receiving end of kindness, and of course, the sweetness on the giving end as well. But it's important to acknowledge the receiving piece. So a little bit of background on loving kindness as a practice, and as well to talk about the other states which we'll be exploring. The word metta, which refers to loving kindness or friendliness, comes from the word mita, which means friendliness. And as the story goes, the practice was generated back in the time of the Buddha, when in his area where he taught, people went, they would go into nature to practice. So they'd be going to the root of a tree or into the jungle in order to practice. And many of the monks reported they were terrified. Just kinds of all kinds of creepy, crawly things, and a very strong cultural belief in ghosts. So a real sense of fear. And so another story goes that when they set up a large gathering of meditators, that there were spirits in the woods that kind of resented being intruded upon. And so that people are having all kinds of weird experiences in the woods. And so the Buddha gave them this practice of generating loving kindness, of just consciously generating well-wishing for self and for others and for all beings. And as the story goes, that became, with this group of meditators, then suddenly everything became very harmonious. But it's a very powerful way of creating harmony in ourselves as well, harmony around us. And it's an incredible practice to support you, calling on these four qualities of the heart. They're not just calming and soothing unto themselves, which they are, but they're also powerful transformational agents. And these are referred to as the immeasurables of kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. That when you really examine each one of these states, they will take you into a state that has no limits. You can't find an edge to kindness. They're oftentimes referred to as well as the divine abodes. Like these are the places when your consciousness is deeply rested in kindness. Kindness for self, kindness for all beings. That you're landing in a very, very powerful place that is without limits. So it's a practice that is not just about kind of mending a broken heart, which it can do, but it's also opening you up to very, very powerful states. So when you begin this practice of cultivating these states, you have to start with yourself. But what I found is starting with yourself can be quite challenging because we are trained from a very, very early state, particularly in this culture, to compare ourselves and judge ourselves and to be pretty hard on ourselves in this culture. Not so much in other cultures. So the best place to start is where it's really easy, which is why I always recommend starting with a pet or a plant or someone who you know loves you. Someone who you know is on your team, someone who you know laughs at your jokes, etc., etc. So when I think about like the dog I grew up with on a farm in Pennsylvania who was my best friend in the world, I can't not feel a sense of gratitude and expansiveness and appreciation. But even this starting point for some can be really, really powerful and really difficult because some of us have a very challenging time accessing positive memories from our past. And it's important to acknowledge that. On one retreat, there was an older man, when it came to the guided heart practices, he was super frustrated. He said, I'm estranged from my wife. I'm estranged from my children. I had a horrible, traumatic childhood. I don't have access to anything as a doorway to this. And he had a long conversation with one of the teachers, about 45 minutes of going through every little part of his life. And where they ended up was when he was a kid, there was a dog on his block that he kind of liked. And that was his starting point. And that's where he began. So just as we have an anchor for concentration practice, when you're focusing on breath or sound or the felt sense in the hands, the mind wanders and you bring it back. The mind wanders, you bring it back. And over time, you know, the energy follows awareness. You'll find yourself a little bit more present to your anchor. In that same way, the anchor here becomes this state of kindness. So in the same way, when you're really focusing on being present with your breath, what that means is you're going to notice all the ways you're not present to your breath. When you begin to focus on cultivating the heart states, what it quite often will reveal is your pettiness, your meanness, your judgmental nature, etc., etc., etc. So as part of the byproduct, you'll know the practice is working when you're finding it challenging or you're having resistance. So I'd like to lead another little reflection, and this time on what's often referred to as a benefactor. And this is someone or something that you have a positive association with. And then we'll explore some of the classic phrases that are associated with this. So again, if you like, you can close your eyes. And again, you might like to feel the breath. It's important to remember that when you are exploring these guided heart practices, just as in mindfulness meditation, the ground of your experience is the body sensation and feeling. In that same way, you're trying to move from intellectualizing the process to internalizing and experiencing the process. So you might just take a few moments and go through the files and think of someone or something that you hold pretty easily in a positive regard. And you might just settle in on one particular point to focus on. And to help to amplify it, you might deepen your breath a little bit. You might sense if you can make this a little more alive visually. Can you picture this either as a still image or a moving image? Turning up the colors or contrast can make it a little more crisp. Any sounds that you associate, or any words you associate with this. And now begin to sensitize yourself to how this feels on the inside. When you think about this being, how intimately can you feel it? And you might reflect on the following phrases, either repeating them internally or just letting them kind of resonate in your awareness. Or if they don't resonate for you, you can make up your own. May you feel happy. May you feel safe. May you feel peace. May you feel free from suffering. And for the next 30 seconds or so, in your own way, let yourself stream a sense of well-wishing, wishing this being well. You might now turn your attention to yourself. Again, feel the breath. And sensing this life journey you have been on, your challenges and your joys. And offering the following phrases or letting them simply resonate, or in your own way, find any offering that resonates for you. may I feel happy. May I feel safe from inner and outer harm. May I feel peace. May I feel free from suffering. And for the next 30 seconds or so, allow yourself to investigate and feel this well-wishing to yourself. Can you imagine expanding your capacity to be happy? Expanding your capacity to feel peace, to feel safe, and to feel free. And as you're ready, you can begin to deepen your breath. And as you're ready, you can open your eyes so you can remain with them closed. What I have found in my practice, particularly when I'm doing it really intensively, like sustaining attention on these practices, and most profoundly when I'm doing a long retreat where I'm kind of undistracted, there's sort of the first rush of wishing myself well. And then it's kind of like if you imagine like a glass of ink, you know, glued to a countertop. You know, either you got to rip the countertop out to pour the ink out, or you flush it out with clear water. And so sometimes when you do these guided heart practices, it's like flushing out the toxins. And quite often what I've noticed is I'm pouring in this clear water of, wow, may I feel happy? You know, may I really feel peace? And it will begin to sort of purge the old voices, you know, the old criticisms, the limiting beliefs begin to kind of come to the surface. I'll be inviting you at the end of the talk to consider taking on a loving kindness project, and either for yourself or for another. And it's a fascinating thing just to include in your practice just some act of kindness that you might bring yourself. Some people have found as they've really gone into this practice of really wishing themselves well, how it really amplifies the critic. You know, just this voice that is always there criticizing. And sometimes it's helpful just to notice that. Some people just give it a name, you know, like, okay, wow, a little bit more of my inner critic, and I've named him Ralph, and we're having conversations now. You know, one thing that I've done, again, as part of an act of self-kindness, is I tend to have a to-do list which is consistently beyond what is reasonable. Has anyone ever noticed that? How you set your to-do list always beyond what you could ever really do realistically in a day. So my routine, and I've been pretty consistent with it, is before I go to bed, I write down three things that I want to accomplish the next day. And then it's sitting there on my desk. And I just tell myself, if I get these three things done, it's a good day. And there's just something about looking for ways that I can sort of like soften that inner critic. So when you begin to really explore wishing yourself well, it will really amplify all the self-talk you have. And for many people, they notice they have a certain belief that if I ease up on myself, then I'm just going to lose my edge. You know, I'm not going to be as focused as I could be if I really let go of pushing aggressively all the time. And you get to really investigate that and see if that's really true. But you may find over time, and many people report this, that again, where the attention goes, the energy flows. That when you explore this offering yourself well, that little bit by little bit, there's a little more self-compassion that can begin to creep in. And in that same way, you can begin to learn to train yourself to offer kindness to others around you. And in the classical exploration of the generating of loving kindness, you have yourself and benefactor, and then you turn your attention toward what's referred to as a neutral person. That is, you find someone that you have no great antipathy against, but no great attraction toward, and as a project, you kind of take them on. You know, may you feel happy. May you feel safe from inner and outer harm. May you feel peace. May you feel free from suffering. And it's a fascinating process. There was a conversation with someone whose daughter was marrying a guy she found really boring. And she was really, really depressed. I mean, she loved her daughter, wanted her daughter to be happy, but the guy that she was gonna marry was just touched her in not at all. And she felt such a sadness around that. And I suggested to her that she might really take him on as a project, a loving kindness project, of just looking for the good in him. And over time, she began to feel more warmth flowing. You know, the classic thing in neuro-linguistic programming, they say that when you fall in love, you tend to focus on what you like and you minimize what you don't like. That's kind of how it happens. And when a relationship begins to break up, one person tends to make a shift. They'll begin to focus on what they don't like and minimize what they do like. So we actually have control over our attention. So a neutral person can be a really interesting practice. And I've shared this before, but just briefly. In doing a month-long meditation retreat, we would do a week on each of these. And so when it was a week for the neutral person, I chose our retreat manager, who struck me as a, you know, kind of a fine but ordinary, non-remarkable person. And so for an hour a day, I was just wishing her well and wishing her peace. And I think it was like the fourth or fifth day of that week, and she walked into the meditation hall, and it was like my heart soared. It was like, my beloved has arrived. I was falling in love with the retreat manager. It was such a great little reflection. So let's just take a moment. We'll just do a quick little Zen pop inquiry into a neutral person. It's a nice little exercise. So if you can bring into mind just someone you might just see on a regular basis, the mailman, or someone where you shop, a cashier. And just take a moment as you settle on one person. And just offering the phrases, but also sensing if you can feel some sincerity. Another way to offer the phrases goes like this. May you feel happy as I wish to feel happy. May you feel peace as I wish to feel peace. May you feel safe from inner and outer harm as I wish to feel safe. May you feel free from suffering as I wish to feel free. And just sense in this minute or two anything that may have shifted on the inside. And then when you're ready, you can deepen your breath. And if you like, you can open your eyes. So this leads to a practice that is known in Vipassana circles as stealth metta, where you take on the practice of offering people well in public places. Of course, not in any overt way. And sometimes I remember to do this, not all the time, but you know, when I'm in Safeway, you know, walking around with my cart, is just to notice the people around me and just to wish them well. It's a fascinating practice. And sometimes people will, they'll just stop or they'll just turn and smile. I mean, it's a fascinating process. And there's a story that Sharon Salzberg talks about, and you may have heard this one, where she was leading a metta retreat, a loving kindness retreat in New York. So they were really intensely doing these practices. And then she sent them out and to walk the streets of offering loving kindness. And so one woman shared a story of how she went to a subway platform and she kind of picked out one person, this like younger man wearing his commuter trench coat, and I think she was doing walking, but just offering this guy loving kindness. And then he walked over to her and he said, "Please don't think I'm crazy, but something in me wanted to ask you if you'd pray for me. I'm going through a hard time in my life right now." How can we measure this? The other story, which gives me goosebumps, is the story of someone who was on a bus, you know, a metro bus in the city. And a man got on the bus who was obviously mentally challenged. And he didn't have the right change. And the bus driver got impatient with him and he kind of went into a rage, you know, just raging. And the entire bus, everyone in the bus just freaked out. And there wasn't a back exit. People were looking to like get out of the bus, but there wasn't an exit. And in the middle of like everyone so charged up, she thought, wait a minute, no one's praying for him. And so she just stopped, you know, may you feel happy, may you feel peace. And then he calmed down. And I swear to God, when he walked by her, walked to the back of the bus, he turned to her and he said, "Thank you, I feel much better now." We really cannot measure the impact of consciously tapping into this well-wishing faculty. So as you know, driving in the Washington, D.C. area has become a spiritual practice for me. I was so shocked at the whole scene here. Thank you for the backdrop. We'll just pause and acknowledge how horrible it is. So it's become a practice, a conscious practice for me, not to make everyone else the enemy. You know, to really, and again, not perfectly, not all the time, but to try to wish people well as I'm driving. It really is, it's become a transformational practice for me. It really has. just to look for the good. So to think of those who love you, to wish them well, like that's kind of the easy part. That's the training wheels. To take on yourself, to wish yourself well, can be challenging, beneficial, but challenging. To look at those you live with that you don't feel any strong attraction toward or strong aversion, again, can be, we know how powerful that can be. And it can also become quite transformational when you begin to embrace what's referred to as the difficult person. You know, the people who really get under your skin. Can you also wish them well? The teacher Ram Dass tells this great story. And he's a very super devotional guy. His lineage was all about, you know, losing yourself in devotion. So he had an altar, and so he would have Krishna and Hanuman, and so as his personal project at that time, his nemesis was Bob Dole, you know. And so on his altar, he had a picture of Bob Dole. He tells this great story, like he'd go to his altar and he'd go like, "Oh Krishna, Krishna, you know." "Oh, Hanuman, Hanuman. Hi, Bob." So we will explore a little more about what it's like to consciously take on the difficult people in your life. And this is where the rubber really hits the road. So again, this practice of metta, of loving kindness, there are a number of levels it operates on. One is it's a very powerful way of self-soothing. It can be a very powerful way of moving into a more wholesome state. It can also be kind of a cathartic process because it's really like pouring clear water into what muddy water. And it'll naturally sort of surface the self-judgments, the judgments toward others, the pettiness, the fear. All of that gets kind of washed through in the practice. But it also points toward when you are in that experience, when you are fully absorbed into the experience of kindness towards self and others, you are in a state that is beyond measure. And pointing toward that experience is a beautiful gift in the practice. So I thought we might close with a little meditation that explores kind of some of the classic offerings from the Buddha's time. So if you like, you can close your eyes. So there are a number of words you can substitute here. Loving kindness, or the word metta, or friendliness, well-wishing. But for this little meditation, I'll use the word metta. And you'll want to find what resonates for you. Is it possible to offer metta to the space in front of you? And can you offer this sense of metta, of well-wishing, into the space behind you? Can you imagine offering it out to the space to your left? Can you imagine offering this out to the space to your right? Can you imagine offering this into the space above you? And can you imagine offering this into the space below you? Can you imagine offering this to the space inside you? Can you imagine the space inside you and the space outside you as one continuous space filled with metta, with loving kindness, with friendliness? Can you imagine yourself a glowing, radiant ball of loving friendliness in all directions? May all beings be happy. May all beings feel healthy. May all beings feel safe from inner and outer harm. May all beings feel free. And sense in your own way this quality of the immeasurable aspect of kindness. No edges. And deepening the breath and sensing the space inside this room. And when you're ready, you can let your eyes open. And before we close, I wanted to offer an invitation. And that is to take on a loving kindness project. It might be yourself. Just to take a few moments, just to put your hand on your heart with your meditation to wish yourself well, or some particular act of kindness you may take on for the next 7 days. Or it might be just some time to reflect on all the people who've been good to you, been kind to you, and take some time to wish them well, or maybe even to express gratitude. It's a wonderful, wonderful practice. Make a list of all the people who've been kind to you and just reach out to them. Or you may want to take on a neutral person, just someone that you might like to as an experiment, or just to daily wish them well and notice what changes when you direct attention in that direction.